Okay, so yesterday, let's just to summarize what we saw. We saw that Tosvot thinks that our Gemara is outlining class size. Is not outlining class size. Is outlining the minimum number of students per class that the government can be required to fund, which is 25. Less than 25, it sounds like from Tosvot, simple read of Tosvot, that the community doesn't have to set up any public school system at all, and then parents are on their own to figure out what they want to do. It's possible that you could tweak that if you think the Emunat Shmuel goes in that direction, which is to say, no, the job of the community is to fund full classrooms. But maybe you could take a subjective approach to a full classroom and not say it's 25, but like the Emunat Shmuel say, it depends on the generation, but still think that the community only has to fund full classrooms and nothing is 25. But that's Tosvot and maybe the tweaking from an Emunat Shmuel, if you think that works with Tosvot. Then there's the position of the Ramban, Rashba, etc., which is, no, this is class size. Even less than 25, the government is always required, the community is required to fund Jewish schooling, even less than 25 people. 25 is the point at which, right, this is really about class size, that 25, up till 25 you only need one teacher, then from 25 to 39, you need a teacher and assistant. Starting at 40, you need two teachers. As opposed to Tosvot, where up to 24, inclusive, you need zero. 25, you need one teacher until 40. At 40, you need one teacher, one assistant. And at 50, you need two teachers. And we noted that one other twist on this, and that was what we were up to yesterday, is that it may not be that this sugya is only about how much of a class can you force the community to pay for, or even class size for the teachers. The Rashba also takes into account how much can you demand of the teachers. And the last point, which is what we left off with the Prisha, is that you also have to take into account how much the question of class size is affected by the question of the commuting. Right, because the Gemara had also set in limitations on commuting. So it could be that these magic numbers aren't less than this, you don't need to do anything. And more than this, you need to have classrooms. But it could be that less than 25, you can force kids to commute. And more than 25, you have to create a local school system. The nafkamina of that being, well, that's only if there's a place they can reasonably commute to. But if there's not even a place they can commute to, even taking into account the distance and the danger and all that stuff in the sugya, so then maybe you would in fact need to set up a school system. And that's where we were up to yesterday. So, as I mentioned yesterday, that Yehonatan's conviction that Tosfot can't quite mean what he means, which is that less than 25, you don't need to set up any school system, and maybe Tosfot himself is more of a hybrid position, that is the position of the Aruch HaShulchan. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes as follows. Remember, the Aruch HaShulchan is living late 19th, early 20th century, Rechiel Michal Epstein, and he writes as follows. This is source 10. Uve'emet lichora einam muvanim divrei ha-Tosfot v'ha-Rosh klal. He said, I don't understand Tosfot and the Rosh at all. The eich efshar lomar de pachot mi 25 yelchu batel chas v'shalom. How could you say that less than 25 students, you don't have to have a school? And what are they going to do exactly? They'll do nothing. God forbid, kids should not be learning Torah. Ubrirali de chavana rabotenu kenu. He said it must be that this is what they mean. Dim yesh ir smucha sheyesha milam de tinoko. Uveir zu lekochafe tinokot, ein yecholin lachof liskor milameid kan, elamochin lair hasmucha. Dizesh amru dein molichin meir leir, zeo bishesh kan chafe tinokot. So the Aruch HaShulchan says it must be that Tosfot doesn't mean that less than 25 you don't have to set up a school. It's that less than 25 you're allowed to coerce people to commute to school. right? Meaning the 25 isn't a function of class size or communal responsibility. It's a function of the commuting sugya, which is you only can't make people commute if they have less than 25, if they have more than 25 locally. But if they have less than 25, you can make them commute. Aval b'pachot mizeh molichin la'ir asmucha. Uraya bura lazeh. Mimasha katava tosut sham alhach delo mamatin and yinuka mir le'ir. I'll prove it, because Tosut says, v'zeh shono, dikon, sheyesh kan chavei yinukei, shiru'uyin lahaskir lohem milamei. Ad kan l'shono, v'chen katava rash. Umay baibazeh pshita de b'pachot mi'chavei. In Koven Zedze, isn't it obvious that less than 25 you don't coerce? Ela vadai dehachi kamri. This is what it must mean. Dikishiesh kan chafei kofin li skor milameid kan. Velolo lichan liira smucha. Avok shein kan chafei, ein kofin elamo lichan. But if it's less than 25, then you force them to commute. Vechol ze. And therefore, that is only true. Kishiesh ir. Smucha imalamdim, if there is a place they can commute to. Avo b'deleka, but if there's not even a place they can commute to, pshita shikofin zedzet liskor melame, then even Tosfot would agree that you need to set up a school system. Yeah, Ezra.
So would the town that the kids are living, like, be paying the town that the kids...
That's an interesting question. He doesn't say, but I assume there would have to be some sort of... meaning maybe you would say that if the people in town A go to town B because they need, you know, they don't have a big enough group in town A, then for these purposes they become a big, you know, one big community and have to... pool funds. I think that would be a reasonable assumption based on the Aruch HaShulchan.
So if you have like 24 kids in a class, or 24 kids in a city, and there's a larger city nearby, you'll just like basically just bus them all to the other city and pay for it and for them to be placed in a class for one other kid?
Yeah, basically. That's basically what you would do. He notes in Sivcha Vav, I won't read it inside, but he notes that the Ramah doesn't actually sound this way. The Ramah, in quoting Tosfot, sounds like the Ramban's understanding of Tosfot, which is that less than 25, you are not obligated to fund any communal education whatsoever. The Aruch HaShulchan can't believe this is true, and that's why he thinks that even Tosfot has a hybrid position and thinks that it's more about, you know, when can you force commuting, but not when can you force public education. Because according to the Aruch HaShulchan, if there's nowhere to commute, even Tosfot would be moda, that you have to have a local school system even for, let's say, 15 kids, right? He notes that the Ramah doesn't seem to say that. But he just thinks that that's impossible. He can't think that there's any possibility that post the Takana of Yishuv and Gamla that we would have a situation in which people cannot have access to education. If you skip to Chav Zayin here, he says, V'yesh lehestapei kesheyesh chav hei tinokot bi'ir u'miktzatan omrim anu nilmod me'atzmenu. So he said, what happens if you have a city of 25, but certain parents say, look, we really don't want to put our kids in the public school, in the communal school. We want to hire private ones, which won't leave 25 people. He says, "Ulefi hasvara nireh she'enichol lachov uvachreach oshi lechem eracher eskru milamed ba'atzmam." Ach kishiyad maseget avolavachim memela shemesayin lahem kimol ha'talmudar akloliyot shebeir shekulam chayavin litein al ze. So he says he actually thinks that in such a case you can't force the community to go to school. Right? People have a right to hire private teachers. Even if that means that other people will have to hire private teachers as well. But he says that's only if both groups have the money, in theory, to hire private tutors for smaller classes. But if not, then you do have to fund the communal institution, right? So for the Aruch HaShulchan, basically, if you had a very wealthy community of 25, and 13 of them wanted a small class of 13, and the other 12 said, we'd rather a cheap class of 25, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, in that case, either, if they're all wealthy, so the 13 can say, look, I just don't want such a big class. I'm happy to pay the extra for my private tutor, and you have to pay for your private tutor and deal. There's nothing we can do about that. But if the second group can't afford it, so then the group of wealthy parents do in fact have to support the other parents as well. Okay, you guys have frozen. So, fine. So, the Aruch HaShulchan also follows the position of the Emunat Shmuel that we already saw, that 12 is simply a, that 25 is only a, in the time of the Gemara, but in a time when you need smaller classes, and that could in fact be enforceable. Okay, let's turn. Why would you need what, Ezra?
Smaller classes. Like, what would cause that shift?
Different things, right? They assume that people have less attention spans, or in the time of the Gemara, they're talking about people who Hebrew maybe is their first language, and now it's not, so they need, you know, more help, you know, different reasons. I don't know, how many, what were your class sizes like?
It depended, but some were up to, like, 28.
Yeah, right, okay, I mean, I think even now, right, that's more or less the number. Okay, so let's turn from this to the question of the commuting. More directly. So there are a lot of halachic sugyas that have come out of this, and I don't think I'll get there. As I mentioned, Yehuda Zolden has written a series of articles on basically every thing that he sees coming out of this sugya. So he wrote one article about, does this sugya tell us anything about whether you're allowed to expel students from school? He wrote another article about whether you're allowed to set up elite institutions. Right, to have normal institutions and right, like New York, like to have Stuyvesant and Brooklyn, and Brooklyn Tech and Bronx Science and all the regular public schools, but of Torah, right? Are you allowed to do that, or does this sugya imply that you need to leave everyone in the same system to ensure the same level quality for everybody? So there's a lot of angles that you could take on this sugya. I'm happy to share those articles with you, but let's turn to the other one, which is, I think, most intrinsic to the sugya, and that is the one we've already touched on several times, which is this commuting question. So if you remember, the Gemara had said, look, you can't send someone to another city, you can send them within a city, but not if there's a river, but you can send them within a city if there's a river with a bridge. So the question is, what exactly are the principles in play here? You know, we've already talked a little bit about how they affect the class size, and we'll flesh that out now. But let's try to flesh out the main issues in it. So Rashi says that why is it that we don't make kids commute if we can at all avoid it? Do you see Rashi? Or did you note what Rashi said on this? Okay, so Rashi says that the reason is Shema Yuzak Bidrachim Shasatan Mekadreg Shatzakana. Rashi assumes that the issue is that the roads were dangerous. And to be fair, there's good reason to believe that that's why you might limit forcing the kids to commute, because the Gemara said you can make them commute within the city as long as they don't have to cross a river, and even if they have to cross a river, it has to be a safe bridge, right? Which does seem to indicate that part of the calculus here is danger.
And
if danger is, you know, part of the calculus, then even if the school is then, you know, one block away, yeah, but across the street, that already is some danger.
It's different than traveling on, like, roads where there are no people and not near any houses.
Okay, very good. Right? So the second you say that it's about danger, then you've got to ask, okay, well, what if the roads aren't dangerous? And what if the Matthias changes? And you also have to ask, is it only about danger, or is it also about, you know, defining your community for the purpose of the school system? Right? I mean, part of this is that it's clear that you're funding a local school system, going back to Ezra's point before, which is if you ended up forcing kids to commute, would they have to join funds, right? Part of it must be that that it's also about defining a community. And those things seem to be what's at play. So, so as we saw, right, the Prisha and the Aruch HaShulchan both think that that this limitation on commute is not absolute. Right? We've seen that several times already. And that's why if you have less than 25 kids locally, it's not that you don't have to, you can let them go without learning at all. It's that you can make them commute. Now that already indicates that, you know, it might be that like it's somewhat dangerous, but still, if necessary, a reasonable thing to do, right? The question is, if you have an alternative, what would you do? Or something like that. Now, we saw in the Gemara, right, that the Gemara, again, the simple understanding of the Gemara really is that the issue here is danger, because it brought up the issue of the river. Right, and it also brought up later on in the sugya the issue of the different strength of the bridges and things like that. So you know, how would you now if this is really the issue? So how would you translate this into modern? Right. I mean, what is really the concept behind it, and how would it translate into modern psak? So, you know, their roads were clearly more dangerous in a certain sense, right? There were robbers on the roads and things like that. That's why when you travel to certain places, you may not go mail. But on the other hand, you could argue that, you know, this isn't real danger. It's because there is some danger that already is what makes us define communities smaller, right? I think there is some sort of interaction between the question of danger and the question of how do you define a community, right? I mean, you could say, look, even if it's not like a super danger, like I would travel from city to city, the fact is at least some danger is enough to make it that I don't make that trip lightly, and therefore I'm separate from that city, right? I think there is some sort of conceptual interaction between the question of danger and defining the city. But once you say that there's this interaction, you have to say, okay, but then what does that mean nowadays where people normally travel, or travel is quick, or there's public transportation? Right, what does that mean? How do you define a city for these purposes, and how exactly do you translate these limitations into the modern context? In Israel, during the height of the Intifada, the question was also asked, does the danger of bombs on public transportation or terror attacks on the roads, Molotov cocktails and things like that being thrown on the roads, right, really at the height of it, how does that affect this, right? Meaning even if you're close enough that in normal circumstances is a 5-minute drive, if the issue is really danger, does that affect how you define the cities for the purpose of public of communal education, when there is a real and present danger in the community. So, the way the poskim, and again, I'm just going to sort of run you through some of the articles here. So, So one assumption of some modern post-skim is that we definitely need to be a little bit more expansive in terms of how we define our community for the purposes of this. Because he said, look, you know, again, if the two factors here are danger and what is defined as one community, so when travel is hard, you know, it might be quite a distance, even a short distance, and, you know, it would be dangerous, and the two cities would be defined as separate. But, like, in Gush Etzion, like, all the smaller yeshuvim, they have joint school systems, and the whole, you know, the whole road, you're talking like a 12-minute drive, you know, on the main road, so you have these regional school systems. So, in the modern context, because travel is so easy and it's relatively safe, should those be considered one city for these purposes? So Reb Chaim David Alevi, and this is the source I gave you, in 11, does seem to think that because of the reality on the ground, we should treat these, you know, Batei Sefer Ezeri, right, these regional school systems within, you know, whatever, a 10-15 minute drive, whatever it might be, as one big city for these purposes. And again, as Ezra noted, I think he's assuming that, you know, these schools, these communities are jointly funding it because they're in such close driving distance. And therefore, yeah. Now, I will note, in addition to the effects of the commuting limitations on defining the community for the purposes of classes, there does seem to be independently this idea that you shouldn't send kids on these dangerous roads, right? That does seem to be the third factor in this sugya. Yes, Ezra?
Would you say that with, like, the existence of Zoom, there's, like, no concept of, like, city anymore?
You got cut off for a second. With the concept of what?
Like communities or cities specifically for schooling.
Because of what?
Like Zoom.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question, right? This is something I've worked on for a long time, which is, does the notion of city get redefined because of communication technology? And now that we see, just like right now, right, I can theoretically teach you on Zoom, does that mean that, you know, you can never force someone to set up a school, let's say if there's less than 25, because you could always Zoom into another class? Or maybe we should just join everybody, I think you'd have to wonder, right? According to the post-skim, that part of the calculus here is what's most effective. You'd have to ask, is it really that effective to do, right, to have only Zoom class? I don't think the answer to that is yes. It might depend on the grade, it might depend on the circumstances, but I think you're right, it definitely has to come into the equation. I'm not sure exactly how, right? I think it's an interesting halachic point, but I'm not sure. I think it definitely has the potential to change this this calculus. So, the, Chaim David Halevi here makes a few points. He says, first of all, he thinks that the aspect of the Gemara that isn't about the effect of commute on class size, but rather the Gemara seems to have this independent value of not letting people force their kids to commute when not necessary. So he thinks that the latter one, at least, is mitigated when there's no real danger, right? And therefore, he thinks that if there's multiple schools in the area, you know, one which wouldn't require your kid getting on a bus and one which would, it's not illegitimate to say, as long as the roads are safe, since that does seem to be the central concern of the Gemara, that you can choose, you know, the school that provides the best education for your kid, and you can't just say, well, I have to suffice with the lesser education because I'm not allowed to put my kids on a bus if I don't have to. He thinks that's unreasonable, right? The Gemara seems to have a danger standard, and as long as it's not dangerous, he doesn't think that you can be prevented from sending your kids to another school in the area. And as I said, he also seems to think that communally we define you know, the city, not as the city, the yeshuv, but as, you know, the reasonable area in which people would join together for school. The other poskim had different standards. They assume that maybe you could make people travel up to, Rav Avadia assumes maybe up to 72 minutes, right? Which we know in some places 4 mil is you know how long we consider a community. So Rav Zolden quotes, I looked up the Tshuva in the original, but I'll just go through his summary. He quotes Rav Avram Dori, who paskined that for the purpose of this halacha, all small yeshuvim in an area are one big community, but he does think that distance is part of it. You know, and this is this I think takes us back to the conversation we were having. You know, Gavi and I were having, competing whose commute was worse, right? That I think that the main concern in the Gemara is danger. You know, part of it also seems to be. Okay, so Rav Avadia is quoted in this Tshuva of Avram Dori as saying, look, if you can negate the danger issue, so then the only issue is defining the community and, you know, how reasonable, you know, how much can you impose on kids to commute, you know, basically send them to another city. There he thinks as long as the roads are safe, up to an hour and 12-minute commute, 72 minutes is reasonable, which, you know, I guess, having done that, I don't know if that's true. It really does... What?
Where does he get an hour and 12 minutes?
Meaning 72 minutes, 4 mil, right? Which is like that standard that we have in general, like for Birkat HaMazon and things like that. You know, I think it's an interesting question. Could you make an argument that since we know that, you know, above half an hour commute is when people's quality of life and ability to concentrate goes down if they're commuting more than half an hour each way, so maybe that should have an effect if you think that the commuting limitation... also has educational reasons for it. I honestly don't know, but I think that's all potentially in play. Another question that is ambiguous in the sugya is that the Gemara goes through all the different ages at which people had to go to school. So originally it was only 16 and 17 year olds, and eventually it was 6 and 7 year olds. But it's not clear. These limitations on commuting, what ages do they continue to apply to? Meaning, do they only apply to these younger grades? Do they apply to the older grades? Right? How does the age issue work in to the limitations on commuting? So the Marsha writes. That the it goes as follows: even post Takana Rishu Ben Gamla, 16 and 17 year olds can be made to commute. The Takana Rishu Ben Gamla was that you can no longer make 6 and 7 year olds commute. For them, you have to set up a local school system, right? That's how the Marsha thinks the age issue works in to the commuting issue. Yes, Ezra.
Why is the class size like not changed by age? I feel like
it probably is, right? It probably in the end of the day is the 25 applies to the, you know, the younger kids, and at some point it stops to apply, right? Meaning yeshiva don't have 25 kid limits on shir, you know, like, you know, Rav Asher Arieli has the biggest shir in the world. He has over 500 kids and 500 guys in the mirror in his shir at a time. It's you know, one full Beit Midrash and then broadcast live into another Beit Midrash. You know, they had these crazy pictures of when the mirror was in the mirror Brachfeld, at least, was in Bidud, when you guys were in Bidud, same time. But they have, you know, many more students than we do by, like, you know, magnitudes of, like, you know, a lot. They have hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of students. So they rented out Ein Gedi to have it, and they have these pictures of all the guys on their mirpasot overlooking the lake with the Rav on like a megaphone giving shir. You know, at some point there isn't a limit. You're right. The 25 seems to be limited only to the younger grades, and therefore the commuting limitations seem to be limited to those ages as well. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav assumes that the cutoff is 13. That before Bar Mitzvah, you're subject to these limitations on commuting, and therefore you have to set up local classes. After 13, you can be forced to have kids commute. I assume they just think it's a distinction between minors and adults. Say it again?
They're old enough to fight off the robbers. Just give them space. There to go.
One more time. You're in and out.
They're old enough to fight off the robbers.
Yes, exactly. They're old enough to fight off the robbers. Or to do something productive on the bus to school. I don't know. Moshe Feinstein does seem to imply this as well in a tshuva where he was asked whether people were allowed to send their kids from Sutherland to Gateshead.
Because like they were really he said like if maybe the distinction between like are they above 7 or like below like a certain age, because below a certain age, like quality of education doesn't actually matter, man. Kids can't really stand the really long drive. If you're an older kid, you could with an old drive and a better teacher is better quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Yehuda Zolden's summary of the issue, he thinks, is that until 7, according, or maybe until 13, you can't make people travel at all. You have to have local schools, maybe a few minute drive, if you want to define your community a little bit larger than that. Either from 7 or 13 to 16 and 17. So then if you have enough kids locally to get the 25 number, so then you should set up local schools. If not, it's legitimate to set up regional schools. And after 16 and 17, we don't have any of these requirements. You can set up, big schools, farther away and have kids, attend them. To be fair, in Israel, it's pretty normal for kids starting in high school to already be dorming. So I wonder how that affects these halachot as well. But that does seem to be, I assume that would be a relevant factor. Okay, I'll just read you, I'll go through his summary of the issues. He says, what emerges from this sugya is that people have obligations to set up local school systems. You should have, up to 25 students, then you definitely need a local one. More, less than 25, that is subject to the machloket. Whether you have to set for smaller classes, we've talked about. If there aren't enough people, so then it could be that you have to force people to commute, even if it's somewhat dangerous. These limitations on commuting only seem to apply either up to age 7 or up to age 13. After that, they fall away. And the older you get, for sure, right, you have more freedom. He also notes that presumably, halachically, in a case when the local government doesn't have enough students to justify having a local school, this sugya would indicate that the community at least has to pay for busing, right? That does seem to emerge from the sugya, right? Meaning Ezra's point that they probably have to contribute to the general school system is probably also true. But they probably also have to provide busing for the parents to enable them to get to school. Okay, that's the commuting issue. Do you guys want time to really read through all the tshuvot on special education, or should I give you the 10-minute summary and then let you go to Q&A? I feel like that's a better idea. Yeah, everyone's agreeing with me. Okay, so how would these issues play into funding special education? So here, I'll point out the following. There's a much more complicated question, which is, is there a chiyuv chinuch on for children who are not halachically ever going to be bari dat, right? Who are halachically ashote, right? Who are you know mentally retarded to the point where they're not chayiv in mitzvot. That's a very complicated sugya. I can send out an English article by Rabbi Bleich or a different English article by Rabbi Michael Taubes on that issue. If you're interested in that, I encourage you to read it. That's a very broad question. I don't want to deal with that question. I want to talk about the very simple, the much relatively more simple question, which is, if you're dealing with people who are halachically definitely bari dat, but it requires more communal resources to provide for their education because, I don't know, they have dyslexia, right? I don't know, right? Come up with an issue where someone's clearly a bar dot, but they might not do well in a class of 25 without special attention, right? Either a smaller group or an aide or, you know, whatever. So it could be, right? It could be dyslexia, it could be ADHD, it could be a host of, you know, relatively minor learning disabilities, someone who's clearly, you're chayiv to educate them because they're chayiv and mitzvot, but providing for their education would cost a lot more money than it would for a class of 25 regular, you know, unencumbered students. So is the communal responsibility to provide education going to include them as well? So here, Rabbi Yehuda Zolden notes that, in general, the poskim assume that there is some sort of communal obligation, but they very much dispute why that obligation exists. So, what do you think, conceptually speaking? Do you think it makes sense that providing for special education would be obligatory under the takana of Yeshua ben Gamla? What do you think?
If it's based off the expectations of, like, the city to pay, then the fact that, like, kids have extra needs wouldn't make a difference.
Right, so I think, right, exactly. So I think Ezra's right, that if you take Tosfot's position, not as understood by the Aruch HaShulchan, but simply Tosfot's position, that, look, the 25 number is because there's a limit to how much you can demand from the community, even if we admit that the kids need it, right? Even if we admit that kids need smaller classes, Tosfot seems to think, as the Ramban understands him, you just can't expect the community to provide funding for classes of five. So by that same logic, you would say, according to Tosfot, it can't be under the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla. Okay, very good. But Ezra, continue. But if you think what?
Based off of, like, the need of the kid, how much they're given is based off their needs. So if they need smaller class size, then this is
very good. Right. But if you think more in the line of Ramban and the Rajba, that class size tells you that no, the community has to fund whatever is good for the kids. So you, just like the Emunat Shmuel took that logic and said, well, if nowadays people are only successful in classes of 10 or 12, so maybe the community is in fact responsible. So he notes that Rabbi Yashiv seems to believe, like that latter formulation, that the community is obligated to fund special education because of the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla, which what I would argue is a conceptual extension of the Rajba, the Ramban, and definitely of the Emunat Shmuel. But if you take the more Tosfot position, you would say no, right? You can't demand that from the community. And maybe even according to the Ramban and the Rajba, you would say, look, the community can be responsible to fund smaller classes maybe if everyone needs it. But to impose that much extra funding for one or two kids, that really, right, could cripple the communal system. So that can't be under the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla. So both Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach think that it's probably not the case that the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla obligated you to fund special education. But nevertheless, they both said that there's good reason to think the community should fund it for other reasons. Ramosha says, look, it might not be the Takana Mishuben Gamla, but it's definitely, at the very least, Staka. So therefore, what would come out is presumably, if the community is really, really, really pushed to its limits, so then they wouldn't have to fund special education, because it's not as fundamental as Takana Yishuven Gamla. But assuming they have the money, so then they should fund it from the rules of Tzedakah, which is a more expansive category. Rishon Zalman Orbach takes a different approach, and he says, look, it may not be Takana Yishuven Gamla, but he assumes that there's an obligation for the community to set up a basic health system. And he thinks that taking care of the special needs of certain kids is a function of public health. And therefore, he thinks the right avenue conceptually is is saying that the community is obligated to provide a certain level of public health, which also includes educational help for those who are challenged because of certain educational impediments. So in the end of the day, you know, he notes that the modern poskim do assume that if the community can fund special education, they should. Well, Yashiv seems to think that it's really part of the Takana Yishuven Gamla, and therefore it has the high standards that the Takana Yishuven Gamla has. Ramosha and Rishon Zalman push it into other categories, and therefore they do have to fund it, but they have to fund it according to the rules of either Tzedakah or of communal funding of health systems more generally, where the parameters are presumably different than they are in the Takana Yishuv Ben Gamla. So that's his, in 5 minutes, his summary of the sugya. Like I said, the more conceptually difficult question of education for people whose mental limitations are such that they're probably not ever going to be chayv in mitzvah, that's a much more complicated sugya, which I'm happy to provide English articles to summarize it, but I don't think we're going to do that in shiur. Did you want to look at the issue of whether hitting, how we got to the Gemara encouraging hitting children to modern psak, or should we leave that on the side and start competition? I don't know, we'll think about it. In the meantime, guys, take a break. Ray Ginsberg said he's going to do Q&A in a few minutes, so take a break before Q&A. And as we figure out the schedule, I'll let you know, okay?
All right.